Welcome to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery. And it's brought to you by our friends from Reprieve Recovery up there in Morgan, Utah, an all-female facility. They think they can house about 8 women. And without them, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast. And a good friend of mine and one of the owners of Reprieve, Ryan Brown, sent me a text and said, I just wanted to say thank you so much because of the sponsorship on the podcast. We have received our first patient from the podcast. And so they said, thank you very much. And I said, well, no, thank you for what you're doing, because the service you're providing is necessary. And we couldn't thank you enough for doing that. I also have a friend whose wife is currently in Reprieve Recovery. And I talked to him yesterday, and he said the transformation of his wife is amazing. He said she's doing wonderful. Her voice sounds clear. Her head is thinking straight. And he says, I thank you, Casey. And I go, oh, don't thank me. Thank Reprieve. And thank your wife for being brave enough to say that she needed some help. And that's what it's about, is just admitting that you need help. You might be wondering, where's Dr. Matt? Well, Dr. Matt is on vacation with his lovely girlfriend, and so we're rolling solo today. So when you get Casey Scott solo, you don't know what you're going to get. We're just going to have a hodgepodge of things that are in my brain. There's this therapy exercise. It's called free-form writing, and it's designed to help you kind of just reset the body and get things out of your head. And they say the process of writing them down allows you to do that. And so what they say to do is just grab a piece of paper and a pen and just start writing. Don't worry about grammar. Don't worry about spelling. Don't worry about consciousness of thought. Just let it all spill out. And so that's what we're going to do, but we're not going to write it. We're going to speak it. And so it's going to be a free form. And these are things that have been bouncing around in my head, whether it's in the shower, in the gym, watching TV, whatever it may be. I've always got thoughts that are bouncing around in my head. And one thing that keeps bouncing back into my head, and we've heard it here on this podcast many a times. I've said it myself, and if parents are out there, they probably said it too. And what they say is, I would do anything for my kids. I would die for my kids. And I think that's a powerful statement. I think most parents out there, when they say that, they believe it. But I want to ask you this. Would you live for your kids? Because that's what we're asking in this world is, and I think it's a great sentiment. I really do. It's like, I would die for my kids, but would you live for your kids? And when I say live, I mean, would you do what's necessary to be around for your kids? Because that's what your kids want. Your kids want you to be around. And now we're speaking in addict terms. So what I'm saying is, I know that I can't get sober for anybody else but myself. I know that in my recovery, and that's the reality. The only way that this works is if you get sober for yourself. But when you say, I would do anything for my kids, I would die for my kids, I know you believe that, and I know you mean that. But would you live? Would you do the hard stuff it takes to be around for your kids? That's the question. You know, and you have moments every day to prove that to yourself. Are you going to make the good decisions when it comes to eating? Are you going to go to the gym? Are you going to get enough sleep? Are you going to see a therapist? Are you going to do all the things that's going to make you a better you for your kids? I'm 50 years old. Wow. That sucked to say, but it's true. I'm 50 years old, and I still need my parents. And there's a lot of people out there that for some reason or another might not have their parents around. But everybody needs that connection. You know, they say the opposite of addiction isn't abstinence, it's connection. And it's that connection that we have with the loved ones surrounding us that makes this world so beautiful. To have that ride or die, to have that person in your corner that's going to be there for you. And so when I hear people say, I would do anything for my kids, I would die for them, I want you to reframe that and say, I would do anything for my kids. I will live for them. And that means making the good decisions. And life's all about decisions. And I've said it before, I'm not a huge 12-step guy. I think it's a great program. I just don't think it's a fit for me. I use a lot of the practices that they talk about in my daily recovery, but the whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. But I've been to enough AA meetings to where people have stood up and said, I would not wish this disease upon my worst enemy, but I would not change it that I got it for anything in the world. And I still, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I still don't think this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. My sobriety is one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. But my life is full of good decisions and bad decisions. And I think you need to have both to get you where you're going. My dad used to tell me all the time, he goes, Casey, you don't need to know what you want to be in life. You just got to know what you don't want to be in life. And in that way, it opens up the world to find out what you're into. And so if I'm looking back over my life, 50 years, if you will, I've had some really, really good decisions. Marrying my ex-wife and deciding to have three wonderful children with them was a good decision, and a decision I will never regret. Getting sober has been one of the best decisions I've ever done in my life because it's given me everything that I wanted and given me the opportunity to have and look for more. Meeting my girlfriend on a blind date was one of the best decisions I've ever made. She is an amazing person. A lot of people don't know about my girlfriend. We call her the lovely Leslie. She is an amazing person because she is my ride or die. Like, little bro speech here, dudes just want to ride or die. And if you don't know what a ride or die is somebody that's going to be with you, where you just have to say, this is what we're doing, and they're going, okay. I first met Leslie, my girlfriend, who I've been with almost 6 years now, a month and a half before I got into recovery. When I met her, I was a full-blown alcoholic. And she didn't know. She knew I partied a lot, but we were in the infancy stages of dating, so that's what you do. She just thought every time she saw me, we were going out for a good time. And we were, but the good times were always going for me. But to be honest, they weren't really good times because I was going through a lot of stuff. But I met her a month and a half before I go into rehab. We went on a couple of dates. Everything was going wonderful. I really, really loved her and thought she was an amazing person. And one day, her phone stops ringing. And she starts getting phone calls from other people asking where I am and what happened. Because I got in an accident. I selfishly chose to drink and drive. Caused an accident. Hit two different families. Ended up with stitches in my head, arrested, handcuffed to a gurney, and not knowing what was going to happen. And this amazing lady was then dealt the cards of having to answer for me to her friends, to my family, to everybody who knew us. And when you get into the situation that I was, that's not good. Any normal person would have just cut bait and run. And I wouldn't have blamed her for it. I wouldn't have. But as we know, that night I decided to check myself into detox and then eventually get into recovery where I spent 45 days. When you check yourself into detox, you're not allowed to use the phone. You are, but just to talk to family members and doctors and recovery and lawyers and cops, stuff that needs to be taken care of, not a girl you just met a month and a half prior. So for a whole week, I wasn't allowed to talk to her. And during that week is when my mugshot landed on every newspaper and every TV station in the state of Utah. So while I'm in detox, I decide I'm going into recovery. I talk to my mom and I do all the, you know, the stuff that needs to be done. End up on Pinnacle Recovery. That's where I end up going. And when you get into a recovery center for the first week, they give you what's called a blackout period. And a blackout period is for you to get acclimated into the house, to understand how it works, and kind of, you know, get yourself going into the world of recovery. So you're not allowed to use the phone. They don't want you calling home because they don't want your emotions to play with you. They don't want any outside noise. They just want you to focus on you and get you going towards recovery. So I finally spent my first week in there, which wasn't a good week. I'm still coming off of all the medicine that they had me doped up on and detox, because alcohol is one of the most dangerous drugs to detox from. And so I'm still lethargic. I'm not coherent. I'm in a strange place. And I'm trying to assess my life and figure out where I want to go. So I get going in there and I finally get a phone privilege. And I call my ex-wife. I call my brothers. And I call my parents. And then I decide it's time to give this girl a call. And I call her up and I go, "Hey." And she goes, "Hey." And she goes, "How you doing?" I go, "Well, not great, but I'm hanging in there." And I go, "Hey, do you have running shoes?" And she's like, "What?" And I was like, "Do you have running shoes?" And she goes, "Why?" I said, "'Cause I'd put those things on and I would go. I would not stick around for this." And the phone went kind of silent for a little bit. And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if she was just going to go, "Yep, I'm out." But she goes, "Hey, I'm not happy, but I'm not going to go anywhere. Let's see how this goes." And that was such an amazing feeling. To have somebody go, "Let's see where this goes." I'd like to think she saw the potential. I'd like to think that she wanted to see me in the best version. Because up to this point, she never had. She saw me in a broken down, fake version of myself. And so the fact that she wanted to stick around was crazy. And so you don't get a lot of time for loved ones' phone calls in rehab. So with that, I said goodbye. And I remember just sitting down thinking, this is crazy. And now that I look back and I'm talking about this, maybe that was the first sign that things in sobriety were going to get better. And so I go back to the house and I start doing my classwork. I start doing my therapy, my process groups, my cleaning, whatever they asked me to do, I did. And I remember one day, I've never said this. I go into my room and on my bed is this wicker basket with a minky blanket in there, a pair of gray running shoes, some workout shorts, a shirt, and Cinnamon Jolly Ranchers. And it was a note that said, "You can do this. Love, Leslie." I've never been in prison, but I see how excited they are on the TV show when they get a package from the outside. And just to say that I can understand, because that meant the world to me, to have somebody believe in me. And I wore those shoes with pride and went to the gym and started working on my fitness. And it was the little things that meant the world to me.